This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I'm Feiku. Sharing his food story with me today is Sam Coleman, editor-in-chief of Esquire Malaysia.
This thing called kakas herring, which is testicles of roosters.
Yeah, let's see if he eats the testicles of roosters, huh? Oh, yeah, it's really good. Look at his face. Look at his face.
Later on, he shares his favorite recipe.
She's quite spoiled, and I had to convince her that I could make food. So I learned a quick dish of risotto. It's so easy to make, and it's a go-to recipe that I can always kind of whip up, and, you know, it's always good.
But first up, here are my top chicken rice picks in PJ and Kuala Lumpur for the week. I would be lying if I said I've never met a chicken rice I didn't like, because as we know, not all chicken rice are created equal. But there are definitely quite a few more chicken rice stalls that are of top quality around Klang Valley these days. And here they are, in no particular order, my favorite chicken rice stalls around Kuala Lumpur. First up, Lok Yun Ampang Chicken Rice Restaurant. This is old school Hainanese chicken style, hefty portions, it's hearty on taste, the rice is fragrant, it's bitey, and they sell kampung chicken, although a little bit more work on the muscles, yields naturally sweeter flavors as well. So rather than buy the battery chicken variety, I think you should lash out and go for the kampung chicken. Very much more rewarding. They have also minced ginger that's separately served, they've got a feisty chili that's beautifully garlicky, spicy, and utterly Moorish. Lok Yun was given in 2007 by Kuang Ming Daily the King of Hainanese Chicken Rice Award, which I think is no mean feat. And I think given the quality of the food and the consistently excellent service, Mr. Pang, the owner, Pang Ki Kim, his father opened a restaurant first in Pekan Ampang in 1971. And until today, they've been bringing the children to eat here. They also have liver, they also have soup. It's the perfectly blended proportions in the chili sauce, the quality of the chicken, and the minced ginger that makes them so irresistible. Restaurant Lok Yun Ampang is located at 158 Jalan Ampang Besar in Selangor, near the Ampang Jaya Traffic Police Station. The phone number there is 03-4291-9884. It's closed Thursdays, otherwise it's open daily from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. There's also the restaurant Satellite Ipoh Chicken Rice. Now, I put this place in more for sentimental value than for any real true culinary merit, because I know, and I think the people who will go to Satellite know, that this place, it tugs at the heartstrings. They have the old school, simple, homely chicken rice. The atmosphere in the evening is fantastic. They have buskers coming in. They've got old timers sitting around drinking 40,000 beers. There is a homemade, home-rigged aircon that spits out water. It really is very humble, very down to earth. But the chicken rice, although it's nice, it's not great. It has its better days, but there are days when it is a little less than desirable. They serve steamed chicken, they serve chicken liver, they've also got a tofu curry, they've got signature bean sprouts. I like to visit it from time to time because I feel bad, because the next door restaurant, which is the Ipoh Chicken Rice Restaurant, tends to pull most of the customers. I think, like many other regulars, we go to the Satellite to give them a little bit of a chance, you know, the underdog. Satellite Chicken is valiantly operating at 103 Jalan Gasing in 10/1 Petaling Jaya, and it's open daily for lunch and dinner till late. There's restaurant Yat Ye Hing, which is famed for its corn-fed chickens. It's always very busy, especially in the weekends, so make sure you get there off-peak, otherwise you could be waiting for a table. They have roasted chicken, but it rounds up pretty quickly, so the poached chicken is just as good, I think. They serve it with bean sprouts, they've got soup with it. The chicken has a slightly more yellow tinge than the normal chickens that are served, and the pink hue of the meat doesn't mean that it's not cooked, but it gives a very nice succulent bite. Portions for bean sprouts are nice and generous. But do also try the glass chicken feet if you are into chicken feet, because it's supposed to be one of the signature dishes, although I gave it a miss. Restaurant Yat Ye Hing is located at 33 Jalan SS4D for Denmark Stroke 2 People's Park. It's next to the Kelantan Jaya LRT station. There's also the Ipoh Chicken Rice, which I mentioned earlier, in Jalan Gasing, next door to Satellite Chicken. Now, these guys are the Ipoh Nga Choy Chicken Rice, established in 1977. And I have to say, although it is obvious they use MSG there, the food, the chicken rice, is very, very irresistible. I find my way back there time and time again, despite the fact that I say that I'm never going to visit again. Because it's reliable. The service is brisk. The place is huge, so you can always get a table. It's air-conditioned, especially when it's blasting hot outside. It's very welcome reprieve from the heat. They originally from Ipoh, so the bean sprouts are purportedly also imported from Ipoh every day. They're very juicy, unlike the KL variety, so you know that they're not lying. One of the best things about Ipoh Nga Choy is the bean sprouts, and I like to order mine with salted fish as a variation from the normal style. Roasted chicken rice is my favorite here. The meat is tasty, it's succulent. Go for the kampung chicken variety. It's slightly more expensive, but it's worth the effort. I like to eat my chicken rice here with lots of sweet black sauce because it goes really, really well with the chicken broth rice. And believe it or not, the waiters even use a PDA to take your orders, which connect wirelessly to the kitchen, which means that your meal arrives in no time at all. They also have a lot of other dishes, such as the salted egg fish slices, worth a try, and dishes like lala and tofu and other things. They've really expanded the menu, but I like to still stick with the chicken rice because this is what they're known for. Ipoh Nga Choy is located at 107 Jalan Gasing 10/1 in Petaling Jaya. It's open every day from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. This is Feeding Time. I'm Fei Koo. With me today, my good friend and also a kind of boss, the existing editor-in-chief of Esquire Malaysia, Sam Coleman. Now, for transparency purposes, I write a food column for Esquire, and Sam was the one who brought me in. So I was quite keen to get his food story as an American expatriate living in Malaysia who's traveled the world. And this is a segment where we talk to people about the food that they grew up eating, the food that they love, the relationships they form doing it. So Sam is a prime example to fill us in on a very cosmopolitan food story. So Sam, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in San Diego in the US, very kind of, you know, podoc town, white trash kind of California town. It was a very middle America kind of place to grow up. So it's definitely not, you know, LA or New York. So this is kind of typical America where I grew up.
And sort of food that you ate as a kid?
First of all, I grew up near the Mexican border. So a lot of my food influences were from Mexico. We grew up eating burritos and tacos. And, you know, I would come home and make a quesadilla. You guys would probably make some nasi lemak and rice. I would kind of throw a quesadilla, which is a floured dough thing, and you make it. It's a little bit like a roti, I guess.
You make your own quesadilla from scratch?
That's what you do. The kids would be taught how to make this. You put some cheese on top, cut a tomato, and then that's your lunch.
If it was nowadays, you'd just go and buy ready-made quesadillas and canned beans and canned everything.
But again, don't forget I was white trash. So, you know, we didn't have the luxury of microwaving and here's your meal and make sure it's, you know, done this way. It was like, okay, here's your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and here's a quesadilla. You can choose which you'd want.
But in a way, that's a hidden blessing as well because it taught you certain skills in the kitchen that you might otherwise not have had.
Well, I don't know if I go that far. I think, again, you have that stereotype of Americans eating poorly. And I think I was a good example of that. My parents were incredibly overweight. All my brothers have diabetes. It is that stereotype, you know, but you have to learn how to eat right to kind of break out of that trap. It's a poverty food relationship. And they prove that, you know, just because you put organic food stalls in a neighborhood, because people don't know how to cook things and what that means, they fail. It's a whole culture you have to change. And you know, going off to school, you start to learn better eating habits. But my eating habits were terrible, Faye. Absolutely horrendous.
So you were pretty much like your family. You all ate fairly unhealthily, except for your occasional quesadillas.
Yeah.
It was quite...
Well, quesadilla is considered a Hispanic trash food. So that's just the peanut butter and jelly sandwich for a little brown kid.
Yeah.
So that wasn't much better.
But were there any memorable meals growing up apart from the, you know,
my
that kind of
stuff? My dad was an amazing cook. My dad, unlike my mom, was this incredible cook, and he would make really complicated dishes, and, you know, he wouldn't do plating and, you know, presentation, but he would make really good food. So he was my inspiration.
Give us some of the examples of his more iconic meals.
He loved to make good Italian dishes. So he would make, cannolis, stuffed cannolis with ricotta cheese and things like that. So he would be more into that. And great steaks. He was really passionate about meat. So he was good. Fresh olive, really good olive oils, not just, Bertolli or whatever the one you buy off the shelf and cold
storage.
When
you were a kid, back
then. Even when I was a kid, he would go and really make sure that this was cold press. So he was into that, but my mom, absolutely not.
Where do you think his interest came from?
I don't know. That's a good question. He's dead now, so I can't ask him, but.
But for him to have had the dedication.
He traveled the world. I guess he just kind of, I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah, my mom was terrible. We just gagged thinking we had to eat my mom's food and just like, Dad, can you cook us something? Which is quite a gender reversal when you think of.
Well, especially considering it was, I'm not casting aspersions on your age, but it was at a time when men were not really part of the kitchen.
Exactly.
So for him to have taken on that role and for your mom to actually abhor that role is interesting in itself and of itself. But the fact that he was so dedicated and he went to unearth, cold-pressed olive oils back then. Who even knew about it?
We had to find the Italian deli in this place where I was. It wasn't very common. And my mom got so intimidated by that, she forced him out of the kitchen, which was kind of heartbreaking to watch. But that was just a kind of a power dynamic weird, right? But so anyway, he taught me the better things about food, certainly not her. But again, that typical American dynamic. And it's changed. You know, now a middle-class American family would go to, let's try this, and we're going to go try this Peruvian restaurant. Oh, that's really interesting, ceviche and all that. I think it's changed quite a bit. But for a lot of Americans, not. And probably for a lot of Malaysians, not. Don't forget, kale is not Malaysia as much as, America's not New York.
That's right. That's right. Very well said.
You know, you've got families who kind of eat their typical foods, whether they're very particularly healthy or not, and they just go through a very habitual relationship with food.
So when did you leave home?
I left when I was 20. I was an archaeologist for 10 years. So I traveled around the world and, did that for 10 years.
There might have been a few interesting meals in that part of your
meals.
Life.
Yeah. Well, I'll never forget when I was in Peru, we had something called cuyo. And cuyo, I didn't know what it was. I was like on a bus and, going up to the Andes. They say, would you like some cuyo? And I'm like, wow, okay, I guess. Is that all there is to eat? That's all there is to eat. What it was a guinea pig that they deep fry whole. The teeth are sticking out like this. And they serve it to you on a stick. They just shove a stick up the rectum and all the way through. And then they just serve it to you like a lollipop. Here you go. Here's your cuyo. And I'm like, oh, my God. But I was so hungry, I ate it. And it was delicious.
So it's like a shish kebab.
It's like a shish kebab of a rat.
Probably
a cuter variety of rat, but really essentially a rodent.
But did you eat the head and the teeth?
No, I didn't eat the head and the teeth.
But did the locals do it?
No, they eat the flesh. I mean, you left the head and the tail, I suppose. But it was just like, it was like eating chicken, really. I mean, somebody who's not, doesn't usually eat chicken, you're like, oh my God, you're getting between the wings. Ah! It would gross them out. But yeah, there it was, kind of making sure I didn't swallow the small bones. Yeah.
But what's another interesting thing that you ate during your time as an archaeologist? There must have been the crazy ones.
Working in Africa, I had blue swimmer crabs that made me sick for a week. eating with your hands for the first time is such an alien experience, but that was pretty amazing. Tagine in Morocco was incredible, and having that just be, made for you out in the dunes of the Sahara was pretty cool. So yeah, there's been some memorable meals as you travel.
I think hearing you describe the food that you've eaten during the times that you've traveled, some seem to have been very much linked to the people that you were with and the hosts that share the food with you. Would you say that?
When I was living in Hungary for 10 years, you would learn how to eat like them. So they would have this thing where they put grease on bread, white grease, and sprinkle it with paprika salt, and that became your thing. You use food to indoctrinate yourself into the culture. Malaysia is a perfect example. Can you imagine if I told people, oh, really? Bak Tu Teh? What's that? Or nasi lemak? And they'd be like, whoa, dude, you really don't get this place. You have to use food as a language. And I think it's really important. That old adage, don't refuse anything, even the goat's eyeballs in Saudi Arabia. It is a way for them to be like, this thing called kakas herring, which is testicles of roosters.
Yeah, let's see if he eats the testicles of roosters, huh? Oh, yeah, it's really good. Look at his face. Look at his face.
Is that what they gave you?
That's what they gave
me. Rooster's testicles?
Yep,
and you ate it
and
all?
I had to eat it and smile, you know. But that becomes part of a tribal experience of connection, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a way of acceptance. It's an initiation rite almost because it's, well, he is embracing what we eat.
Exactly.
He doesn't turn it down and he's showing, you know, acceptance and that is good enough for them.
Yeah, and embracing you.
Yes.
You know, if I can accept what you're giving me and that was something you grew up with, it's like I'm connecting with you on a personal level. It's not even an abstract thing. It's
so what did the rooster's testicles taste like?
They were horrible. I smiled. I had to smile, but I was like,
was
wow.
Was it boiled
they're
or
kind of creamy.
Or
they look like little brains on a plate. They were like these little mini. I was like, oh, and they stink. They smell terrible. But, you know, what can you do?
There's always a first time for everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, next up, Sam's going to share some of the interesting and more memorable people he's met eating those meals in his current capacity as the Esquire Editor-in-Chief. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. This is BFM 89.9. You're listening to Feeding Time with me, Sam Coleman, Editor-in-Chief of Esquire Malaysia, and a good friend of mine who's been, I think we can safely say, around the world and in some, especially in your capacity as Editor-in-Chief in the last few years. You've traveled all corners of the world. I follow you on Instagram and I am constantly jealous by the places you go and the people you see and the things you do.
I'm really lucky.
Would you call yourself a foodie? Are you a person who eats to live
no.
more than a person who lives to eat?
No, I definitely wanted to say that. Like, I would not, and that's ironic because I've been placed to be somewhat of a food expert in different categories. I've had to do awards, food awards, and be that person. But no, I wouldn't say I'm a foodie. But I love food. Who doesn't, right? But there are other people who are far more knowledgeable and far more passionate than I am. But, you know, you learn things, and that's good. I've certainly learned things I never would have learned through the job and had meals and places that have blown my mind. And I'm really, you know, grateful for that.
Yeah. So you've been traveling a lot for all the different fashion shows and openings and launches. Yeah. You know, tell us a little bit about the life you've led, the food you've ate, you know, the restaurants you've visited, the people you've met and, you know, during that process.
Well, the great thing is I do Paris, Milan, London. That's my typical route, and I do that twice a year. In fact, this Saturday I'm off to London and then Milan. Of course, Italian food, right? So probably the most memorable experience has been, you know, getting invited to, let's say, Louis Vuitton Friso, and you stop at a small place and they know the good places and you just have these terrific meals and you have so much fun in those experiences because they're much slower. In Asia, it's more of a, we eat, but then we have something to do. But I find in Milan, it's really the whole sharing experience. So that's been amazing, just kind of, you know, being in Florence and going to the top of the museum, which has a really great restaurant right in the heart of Florence and also Milan. So those have been really fun. And of course, dining with these, you know, incredible people, Dolce & Gabbana, having a dinner with them, having a dinner with Tom Ford.
Okay, come on, spill.
I'm spilling.
Give us a snapshot of what you went through and what you ate.
Yeah, let's say the Dolce & Gabbana was interesting because they organized a private dinner in Milan after the show. So we went up to have this private dinner experience with them, which was very Sicilian because that's their vibe. They're, you know, even though I think Gabbana's from the north and Dolce's from the south, whatever it is. But it was just really, you know, and he's walking up and saying, try this. Oh, this parma ham. It's amazing, huh? Melt in your mouth. So it was really that kind of extreme experience. And then afterwards, we went and had a party where they had midgets, and I think they had Lionel Messi was there, and we were partying together. And so, you know, that was pretty cool. And
just in a day's work.
Just in a day's work, but yeah. But I try not to take that stuff for granted and say, well, you know, that's just what I do. It's like, wow, that's amazing. And be humble in that and think that you're really lucky to be there. And that's why I feed my Instagram the way I do, because I want to take my friends with me or readers of the magazine. Like, you're here with me. You're not just, you know, out there. And let's enjoy this together.
Any other interesting things that you've eaten during the last 2 years?
God, I just had an amazing one the other night, actually. They had the National Day of Sweden where they bake the king salmon and then they peel, they pack it with salt all around the exterior.
It's salt baked.
Right. And then they kind of,
the way they cut it, the cutting ritual is very exact, and you have to kind of peel it. And I thought that was amazing.
Where was this?
This was actually here in Malaysia at the JW Marriott.
Because your wife is Swedish.
Well, I was about to say that the segue to that is, having grown up the way I did, and now we're moving to the Swedish food culture, which is unbelievable. I think that's probably more interesting than the kind of highbrow stuff. So my wife takes me to Sweden for the first time. She says, well, we're gonna go out and pick berries. And I said, but can't you just buy them? Why do we have to pick them? That sounds kind of weird. But you realize this foraging culture, which of course kind of manifests in Noma, but it's in, everybody does it. There's special scoopers for the blueberries, and there's, you know, special scissors for the mushrooms. And that has become so exciting. And the way they look at food and the relationship, and it's far more natural. It's much more simple. It's herrings in some sauces. It's hard breads. And I'm really loving the food culture of Sweden so far.
Because you've been going there quite a fair bit in the last year,
yeah,
haven't you?
Yeah, I was there for a month in December. So we went with the kids and we had the whole life. And it was just beautiful.
But the food you ate in December would have been very different from the food you ate recently, say, in spring, right?
Well, of course. You know, it changes because, again...
So give us an example of a great meal that you ate in winter in Sweden.
Okay, well, here's a good example. We had moose because the father actually hunts his own moose. It's very typical for northern Swedes to get together five guys and they form a hunting party. And of course, they have a permit, so they have an allocation of how much moose they can hunt. And they go out together and they kill moose. And then they split it up and then they freeze it. And then you bring it out and you make moose. And then you put sauces on it. So a cranberry sauce, a fruit sauce on the meat is quite a northern European thing and Scandinavian thing. So that was incredible. You know, wow.
Oh, that is just mind-blowing because that is so outside our realm of experience.
I know, right?
Of what happens? You go, you hunt your food, you kill it.
You skin it.
You know, we would be better served as different cultures. We had that opportunity to do that. We would have a lot more respect for the food that we eat, I think. Mm. Don't you find?
But it's a retribalizing. Yes, I totally agree. But it's a retribalizing because you do have that in East Malaysia. I promise you, when they go out and get a big fish and they cooperatively hunt, they do divvy it up. But we've lost that.
Yes.
As we, quote unquote, civilize, we distance ourselves from our food production and we hand that over to an industrial level. But then you go back to that again if you're lucky, which is what's happening now with, you know, locally sourced produce and people
yes.
now more kind of like going out there and saying, I want that pig, and then they kill the pig. And then it's very... anti-urban, but a lot of people on an urban level are embracing that and they
yes.
want that.
And you were also there recently again, say in springtime.
So spring is berry time. So the berries start coming out. So you'll go forage berries. It's also the mushroom time. Chanterelles it's a small yellow mushroom, you probably know. And you have to find it. So Swedish families will have their favorite places where they can find the chanterelles. And so you go and you say, okay, well, let's see if it's there now. Yep, this is it. Let's grab it. Oh, my God. And you won't tell other people. It's a secret. So it's a little bit of a don't tell the neighbors because, you know, because actually in Sweden, you can go on anybody else's land. It's completely legal to go on private property. And if you want to pick their mushrooms, you can pick their mushrooms. So you keep it a bit of a secret. And then you fry that up in a little bit of butter and some garlic. And it is the most amazing thing you've ever put in your mouth.
I know. It's just the simplicity of it
yeah.
as well. I get the chanterelles at the farmer's market.
Oh, you do, hey?
In Sydney. And like you said, simple. Just some butter, just a bit of garlic. Boom, you know?
You're there.
There's the earthiness. There's the
yeah.
wholesomeness. It's just... life
yeah.
in a mouthful.
Yeah. And of course, there's the crayfish parties. That's another Swedish thing where they, again, get crayfish, put them into a big pot. So there's a big family pot that can feed 20 or 30 people. And you crack open crayfish and just stuff that into your mouth. And then just, you know, here, have a crayfish. And you drink booze, of course, because it's an alcoholic country, quite extremely so. But it's fun to move across the seasons and have different food stuff that's available to you. It's almost like appointment TV. You have to kind of force yourself to wait. You can't just go buy it. You know, cloudberries come when they come. You know, I crave it, but you have to wait. And I think there's something nice about expecting food
yes.
rather than just having it accessible
yes.
all the time.
I think that's the problem with a lot of people as well. There's so much instant gratification
yes.
with the internet, with TV, with fast food that you've lost the joy of expectation and anticipation, you
yes.
know?
Yes,
to
totally.
Wait while your mom cooks that slow curry, you know, or, you know, that.
Yeah, what's the Malaysian version of that? What would be something that you had to wait for it to be the right season? I guess hairy crabs.
You well, in the old days, you know, durians, crabs.
Right.
You know, now everything's imported. So that whole expectation of anticipation has also been dissipated. But that's something that's really, really a very thoughtful thing to remember.
Yeah.
So moving forward, your next chapter, you're moving to Sweden.
I'm moving to Sweden.
So what does the future hold? It's good that you love the food there.
Yeah, so far, I mean, everything that I've experienced of the nature, the kind of strangeness of the people, it seems like it's going to be an adventure. And I want to work on a book. I think when you do a magazine or, you know, as you yourself, you're a very busy person, it's really hard to do projects that take more time and more thoughtfulness, as you said.
Yeah.
So I'm going to slow it down. Work on my book for a while, and then, you know, after a year, learn Swedish and figure out what I do next. But I really feel good about the decision. And also, we've got a new editor for Esquire, which you know is Cam Roslan. I'm super excited to have him be the guy that takes over and iterate it in a new way.
Yes.
So,
well, best of luck in your next adventure.
Thanks, Faye.
But next up, Sam, before he leaves us, is going to share a recipe that he likes to make at home. Okay, Sam, so a man of many talents. What's a great dish that you like to make at home with your family, for your kids and your wife?
Well, let me tell you a recipe that I actually had to force myself to learn to court my wife because she's quite spoiled and I had to convince her that I could make food. So I learned a quick dish of risotto, artichoke risotto, but it's so easy to make and it's a go-to recipe that I can always kind of whip up. And, you know, it's always good. So the basic idea is you get the risotto rice. Take the risotto rice, give it a little coating of olive oil, heat it up a little bit. Next step is put a little broth and bouillon cubes into a pan. Get that ready. And then, of course, you introduce it into the risotto rice, and it's slowly going to infuse that rice with the flavor, be it chicken or whatever you want. Artichokes, a little bit difficult to get here, but if you can get them and you steam them, and the time is right, let's say the last 5 minutes of your risotto dish, you get those artichokes in. Again, let the broth infuse into the artichokes a little bit, a little salt, and you are there. And, of course, the Parmesan. And get the right Parmesan. Of course, you need to get the certified Parmesan. Don't just get the cheap stuff. Because the aged Parmesan has a sharpness to it.
Yes.
It matters. It's not cheap.
It's got a great bite. Never buy processed cheese.
No. But even, you know, there's a lot of Parmesan or like what is that one, grated Kraft Parmesan cheese or something?
I mean, yeah.
You know, it's crap. Don't go there.
Get yellow powder.
Get the aged certified Padano?
Gran Padano or Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yeah, Reggiano.
But let's go back to your artichokes. Do you actually buy the whole artichoke and
No, it's too difficult to find here, you know, fresh artichokes. So usually canned is fine.
Okay, so you just use a canned one and you just get it infused into the thing with the risotto and just have a lot of cheese. That just actually sounds really, really tasty.
It is.
Simple but good.
Yeah.
And she said yes, I guess.
And she said yes. So there
fantastic.
You go.
So here we are.
Here we are. She's okay. Like, is that all you cook? Isn't there another dish you want to kind of wow me with here?
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Faye.
Best of luck for
great
the future.
Great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Sam Coleman for his very, very colorful story. If you want to find out more information about the show, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFMFeedingTime. Or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Koo. That's MISSKHOO for more information. Till next Saturday, this has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.